شامخا كالطود فينا ما حنا للكفر هاما لقنا الباغين درسا شاهرا فيهم حساما شامخا كالطود فينا ما حنا للكفر هاما لقنا الباغين درسا شاهرا فيهم حساما معلما صوتا مدوي ليس للكفر شهاما ليس للباغين عهد كيف والبغي سلاما معلما صوتا مدوي ليس للكفر شهاما ليس للباغين عهد كيف والبغي سلاما استمرت يوم تلا أو نطبق النعامة نحن في الحرب أسود لسنا نرضى بالسلامة بل إلى الجنات نمضي نبذل الروح علامة عصبة لله قامت ما ترى فيها السهامة لسنا نرضى اليوم ذلا أو نطبق النعامة نحن في الحرب أسود لسنا نرضى بالسلامة بل إلى الجنات نمضي نبذل الروح علامة عصبة لله قامت ما ترى فيها السهامة لك سكرايات كفر أعقبت فيهم ندامة فاعتلى فيهم صياح أوقفوا زحف أسامة
Well, that was a Nasheedi Islamic song, former poetry, sung poetry in honor of Osama bin Laden, Sheikh Osama. Introducing us here to another episode of Conservative Casual Friday, a weekly blog talk radio show with your show host, Andrew Herod, where we like to discuss important issues of the day for conservatives and others. And today we want to be discussing Osama bin Laden because, among other things, because there's been a recent case in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that has upheld the dismissal of a suit against a professor in Arizona for teaching about jihad, saying that it violated the freedom of religion of a Muslim student who took it. We're namely going to talk with Scottsdale Community College political science professor Nicholas Damask, who has spoken to Global Patriot Radio before about his legal tribulations in teaching a course on politics and global terrorism and the Islamic doctrinal basis for jihad terrorism and how this has gone and how he's been able to uphold his academic freedom, freedom of speech, against legal assaults from the Hamas-linked Council on American-Islamic Relations. Well, Nicholas Damask, welcome to the show.
Allahu Akbar, Andrew. Good to be here.
Yes, indeed, inshallah. Okay. Well, discuss this briefly. This recent legal, final legal development in your battle to preserve your ability to teach your course on jihadist doctrine at Scottsdale Community College in Arizona. What went on at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals?
Well, the Ninth Circuit, of course, is the appeals court level for the Western United States, of which Arizona is a part. It includes California, Hawaii. So the case originated here in federal court in Arizona. And essentially what CARE was asking for, I mean, they're asking for a lot of things, but it boils down to you can talk about terrorism all you want. You just can't associate Islam with it. So you can talk about Osama bin Laden. You can talk about Boko Haram. Just don't bring Islam into the discussion. And in their point of view, in their outlook, you can it doesn't even matter how you're doing it. You can quote from the Quran, which I did, or you can just wing it and do it off the cuff. It doesn't matter for them. You can't associate Islam with terrorism. The district court threw that out. The district court judge, Susan Brnovich, really kind of had a scathing opinion in throwing out their case. So when it got elevated to the Ninth Circuit, what CARE is arguing, what they had to argue is why it shouldn't have been thrown out at the district level. And in doing that, they have to attack the law itself that the district court judge was using to throw it out. And one of the important things as it relates to me is that care saying I, as a professor at a public college, should not have qualified immunity in terms of teaching about this aspect of Islam and overstepping, you know, the separation of church and state and stepping on people's religious sensitivities, that qualified immunity shouldn't apply. In other words, the college district I work in, the Maricopa County district, there's 10 colleges, CARE sued them, and they sued me personally. I got served at my home on a Saturday morning, and CARE is saying I should have no immunity, that I personally can be sued. And the Ninth Circuit said that that was ridiculous and nonsense, and they upheld the district judge's opinion, which is, again, CARE was thrown out of court. So the opinion, in the end, it ends up upholding my academic freedom.
Okay, so in this particular issue, as opposed to going to sort of the merits of the case, as it were, as whether you violated the religious freedom of a student, it ultimately they simply stop at the point of saying you have qualified immunity, which means that sort of like you're just simply implementing a certain policy of a government institution, in this case of a community college, and so therefore, unless you under the doctrine, unless you're violating someone's constitutional right, it's obvious, then you would have to sue the college, the government entity, and say, you know, this policy of the government entity violates a constitutional right, and get sue that government entity for any damages or change of policy.
Yeah, exactly. And what the rule is, essentially, is that any public employee, whether a teacher, a police officer, a nurse, a fireman, you can't go after them personally, seize their home, okay, and you know, things like that. The courts have established qualified immunity to protect public employees from an endless barrage of personal lawsuits. And the only way around that is if there's a specific case that said, all right, public employees, you're on notice, you can't do or say X, Y, and Z. Well, the courts in America have never, ever said that, say, public school teachers, professors at a public college cannot comment on, discuss religion as it relates to terrorism. They've never said you can't do that. That, in effect, what CARE was wanting is, Professor Damas defamed Islam, and he can't do that. It violates religious freedom. So qualified immunity doesn't apply. Well, there's never been a case about it, so it's not like, you know, like you're on notice that you can't do this. The courts have never said anything of the sort, that somehow certain aspects of religion where they, you know, may seem to advocate violence and so forth, that that's off limits, that you can't teach about it. So the Ninth Circuit upheld the tossing of CARE's case out of court.
Yeah, and indeed, in the original district court decision where this suit was dismissed, so it never went actually to trial, you know, the judge there noted that, for example, there had been cases in California or issues in California where children had been Hinduism, for example, had been criticized. And indeed, if you, in the course materials you sent me to look at the PowerPoints that you use in your course, you do indeed talk about terrorism in the past from these thuggies in Hinduism, you know, and
right.
How that before the British suppressed that and their rule over India, you know, that that, you know, killed, I mean, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, these thuggy bands that would go out and, you know, kill and rob people with a Hindu justification. So I guess, you know, according to CARE, you would not be able to study that and talk about that Hindu justification.
Right. And by the way, so what CARE did, knowing full well that there's never been a case like this where the courts have kind of wagged their finger at teachers and said, hey, you can't talk about terrorism and religion, you can't mix the two. They said, well, yeah, but it should be obvious that you can't do that. And what they did is to refer to a case having to do with police violence. And it was a case from Rhode Island, I believe, where a police officer tied a suspect to a tree to beat a confession out of him. And so Rhode Island doesn't have a law that says police officers can't tie suspects to trees and beat them. But the courts in that case said, well, it should be obvious you can't do that. So CARE was saying that what I did was the equivalent of tying a suspect to a tree and beating information out of him. It's obvious you can't talk about Islam and terrorism. So the court rejected that, threw all that out.
Yeah, and indeed, in the district court opinion, again, they also talked about there was a case in California where some people sued because children in the school were exposed to, you know, this discussion about, like, issues of, you know, same-sex relations, same-sex marriage, if you want to call it, and, you know, they made the claim that, you know, that's a violation of our religion. I mean, now you have all sorts of issues in schools, you know, this book Gender Queer and so forth, and in public school libraries with homoerotic drawings of men pleasuring each other and so forth. I mean, you have all these, all this LGBT stuff coming into schools. You know, if CARE's going to say, look, you know, you can't defame Islam, I mean, that would raise all sorts of issues of, you know, parents saying, well, you can't, you know, say that, you know, my understanding of Christianity is wrong, that it's, you know, the Bible says that sex should only be between a man and a woman in marriage, and that, you know, my beliefs are somehow backward or wrong, or, you know, I have the wrong understanding of Christianity, and therefore, you know, I'm going to sue you because you're bringing up these topics in schools. I mean, that's a whole nother theme that would seem to be implicated by what CARE is doing here.
Yeah, they want to, in effect, they want to carve out of the First Amendment a special exception for Islam, that there is such a sin in their argumentation. There is such a thing as defamation of Islam, and what Professor Damas did is, well, he made Islam look bad by associating the dead giveaway. Just to make this simple for the listeners, in the original complaint, the original filing in the district court 2.5 years ago, one of the complaints in their filing against me was CARE said, well, Damas used an image of Muhammad in his terrorism module. That's it. That was their complaint. So that's the dead giveaway. That's like, you know, they don't want any sort of defamation of their religious icons and their doctrine and so forth. They want it to be off limits. There can't be any commentary in terms of Islam and terrorism associating the two. Which,
yeah,
by the way,
I
just want to say, all of this is, this is, the point is sort of odd here, that we're going to not talk about what the terrorists themselves talk about, their own justifications for what they're doing. You know, Al-Qaeda, Lashkar-e-Taiba, Boko Haram, all of these groups publish volumes and volumes of justifications. They have Twitter accounts, they have YouTube videos, and they all make these justifications. And so we're not supposed to talk about that, apparently, because it may make Islam look bad.
Yeah, indeed. You know, we open here the episode with this nasheed, this Islamic song that you can get online about Sheikh Osama bin Laden. That you know, if you watch like the videos of it online, it you know it's clearly showing Osama in a praiseworthy light, Osama bin Laden, and glorifying him, and so the song is singing of his exploits. So you can find such things on YouTube online, and yet. Hear CARE saying, well, we can't really, you know, associate this with Islam or say that there's any doctrine in this, in the faith. We have to ignore this and pretend that, I don't know, you know, Osama bin Laden is just totally misguided or something, or, you know, he doesn't know what he's doing. That just seems absurd.
Yeah, if you just kind of step back and look at the phenomena of Islamic terrorism, not just in the modern day, the last 25 years roughly, but over the course of 1,400 years, why is it that all of these Islamic terror groups sound alike? Well, I mean, if you compare their writings, if you compare their justifications and explanations, they all sound alike. And the reason is because they're all using the same Quranic references, the same references to the Hadith, the, you know, classical jurisprudence. They're all drawing on the same sources. And it's like CARE is saying, well, you're not supposed to talk about that. You're supposed to say, well, they're doing it because they're what, poor or oppressed or, you know, anything but a religious justification for what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, in the original complaint from CARE, which is available in a link at the Investigative Project on Terrorism that did a story on this recent case from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, you can look at their complaint. They write in there, like, for example, Scottsdale Community College was at all times, all relevant times on notice that Damascus was teaching the disapproval of Islam. I mean, is that a crime? Why is that wrong?
Well, first of all, it's just simply wrong. The class is a world politics class. It's not even a class about religion. And the Islamic terrorism module, that discussion, is like 1/6 of the class, and not even all the module was about Islamic terrorism, by the way. You know, a chunk of it is just about terrorism generally, historically. You know, there's examples, like you mentioned, the Thuggees in India. You know, so it's there, but so it's not even about religion per se. It's about Islamic terrorism. If there was such a thing as Mormon or Southern Baptist terrorism, I would have that in the class, but there isn't such a thing as that, so I don't. I'm looking at those groups that claim a religious justification, in this case Islam, for their actions, their terrorist actions.
Yeah, and indeed, in your PowerPoint presentations for the module, well, I guess that raises the question. The other topics you cover in this world politics class are like what? Like maybe, you know, weapons of mass destruction or, you know, economic relations or economic systems. Are those the other things that come up in your course?
Yeah, exactly. It's all the things that you would suspect in an intro to world politics. Of course, there's international law, the global economy, World War II and total war, you know, all of the basics. And given the fact that Islamic terrorism is a massively important worldwide phenomena, of course, I'm going to include that, a discussion of that in the course. But again, from CARE's perspective, you can talk about terrorism all you want. You just can't say that bin Laden used a religious justification for it. That's their entire ridiculous argument, what it boils down to.
Yeah, and you noted in your course materials, again, you know, today, really, if we talk about terrorism, I mean, you know, Islam really, Islamic doctrine really is the issue. I mean, there aren't really any prominent terrorist organizations with other ideologies in the world today. You know, like the IRA is sort of faded out. You know, the troubles in Ireland is not going on. I mean, we don't really have any, you know, sort of left-wing terrorism, the Red Army, the Rote Armee Fraktion, the Bader-Meinhof gang in Germany or such. You know, I mean, the Department of State, all their listings of terrorist groups, the overwhelming majority are from Islamic background. You mentioned a statistic of like 47 of 52 recognized terrorist organizations, foreign terrorist organizations recognized by the Department of State have this Islamic background. But, you know, CARE came at you with this point of saying, well, but what about white supremacy and the you know, the Ku Klux Klan, the KKK or such groups, neo-Nazis that, you know, the FBI is designated as a threat. I mean, that's a common argument you often hear about, oh, white supremacy is really a big threat in comparison to, say, jihadist activity. What did you say in response to CARE making that allegation that you're really downplaying that?
Well, first of all, to the extent there is that so-called, you know, white supremacy terrorism is a thing, sure, there was such a thing as the Ku Klux Klan. But the first impression I get from an argument like that is, has this person come to us in a time machine from the 50s and 60s? I mean, you know, the idea of the Ku Klux Klan in 21st century America running around committing acts of terror and murder, that's not real. That's not a real thing. And the second point, though, is, again, it's a world of politics class. So I'm looking at international political movements, military operations. And if, like I said, if there was such a thing as Mormon international terrorism, if there were hundreds of thousands of Mormon attacks worldwide, involving the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people. If there was whole governments based on Mormon jihad and Mormon fundamentalism, all of that would have been included in the class. But that's not the world we live in now. The world we live in now is one where there is specifically Islamic terrorism to the exclusion of virtually all other sorts of historical terrorism. We don't have thuggies running around in the world. You know, we don't have the Ku Klux Klan. We don't have, yeah, the Bader-Meinhof gang in the 1980s, right, in Germany. So that's not real. That's not the world that we live in any longer.
Yeah, I mean, if you think of the Ku Klux Klan, I mean, you know, I'm currently in Charlottesville now, in the Charlottesville area, you know, you think of, like, the whole 2017 sort of riots and protests with, the, you know, all these white supremacists came here, and, you know, Heather Heyer got run over by this neo-Nazi guy from Ohio. I mean, you know, such individuals, they don't really have an organized network, or, you know, the Christchurch shooter in New Zealand about 3 years ago, or, you know, Anders Breivik in 2011 in Norway, people attributed to sort of right-wing backgrounds. I mean, they're one-off people. They don't really have any organized group, or they'll, you know, they'll write a manifesto or something, or the Tree of Life synagogue shooter in Pittsburgh. It's just kind of some individual, but they're not related to any wider grouping. I mean, you know, the KKK itself is, you know, people joke that, you know, there's sort of more FBI agents in the KKK today undercover than there are any actual members.
Right. Yeah. If you join the Klan today, such as it is, you're basically joining an organization of undercover FBI agents and little and few others. Well, I mean, if you take a look at all of those, those homicides, mass killings, the Christchurch, shootings and so forth, what is the reaction by the authorities in all of these cases? The reaction is to immediately, as soon as possible, arrest the perpetrator, put them on trial. There is universal condemnation for that shooter. The shooter is always a loner. There is no community support whatsoever for these killers. They don't have the authority figures, philosophers and theologians and professors coming out and supporting them and giving justification for what they did. It's a total cultural condemnation and legal condemnation, as opposed to the international Islamic terror movement, which these guys are thought of as martyrs. They're talked about in the schools, how they've, done these great deeds. The local authorities will praise them, praise their families. They get streets named after them, in their towns. There's universal praise for these Islamic terrorists. So the dynamic is totally, utterly different, between Islamic terrorism and any other sort of acts of localized lone wolf type terror acts.
Yeah, and I guess that brings up the whole issue of state sponsorship of terrorism. Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan back on September 11, 2001, of course, they had this host in the Taliban-run Afghanistan. Taliban's now back in control again in Afghanistan, raising once again worries of any sort of jihadist group taking up their abode there. You had Ayman Al-Zawahiri, who recently got killed by an American drone strike in Afghanistan, or Pakistan as well has often been, people have written about it, that it's used jihadist proxies precisely as its instrument of statecraft, of national security, supporting attacks on, say, Mumbai in India in November 26, 2008, and supporting the Taliban as well as other groups having links to Al-Qaeda. I mean, Osama bin Laden himself was, of course, hunted down in 2011 in Pakistan, like a mile down the road from the Pakistani military staff college.
Yeah.
So, clear linkage there. And, Iran is a state sponsor of terrorism, supporting Hezbollah and Hamas. And the Palestinian Authority, as you've indicated, they have their so-called pay-to-slave program. They'll, finance the families of these so-called martyrs, these shaheeds who engage in suicide bombing and, other attacks that they're actually are paying for people who are in prison because of terrorism. And that's all, justified by a Palestinian Authority that defines itself as an Islamic state in its basic law, saying that Islam is the, official religion and indoctrinates people in schools for that. So you have a whole host of states across the Islamic world that are indeed sponsoring jihadist groups. So this, in contrast, say, to, Breivik or the Christchurch killer or any KKK organization, there's no, neo-Nazi sponsoring state or such that's sponsoring terrorism. I mean, even, North Korea might sponsor the, supported the odd assassination or such, or blowing up a plane here and there. But I guess that's about it beyond any such self-professed Islamic states.
Yeah, that's again, that's why we have to keep the discussion real. Kerr says, why don't you talk about the Ku Klux Klan? Well, that's because in the 21st century, we don't have Klan states. We don't have fascist and Nazi states anymore that would make an international, let's say, white supremacist terror movement viable. There's no such thing as international terrorism without at least tacit, if not overt, state support. International terrorists need to be able to communicate, They need to be able, there have to be financial flows. There needs to be travel, passports given, and that state enables all of that. And today, in today's world, the states that are enabling terrorism are Islamic, you know, ranging from Iran to Saudi Arabia to the Palestinian Authority. Again, whether it's overt like Iran or more tacit like Saudi Arabia, it doesn't matter. They're enabling international terrorism. And we just don't see that for, again, I'll go back to my example of Mormon terrorism. Show me an international Mormon terror group. Show me a Mormon state giving them support. These things aren't real. And so if they were, again, I would talk about those things in the class, but they aren't, so I don't.
Yeah, I guess that's an interesting point, and you do indeed note that in your PowerPoint course materials that to have a truly international terrorist group and, you know, more than just sort of a one-off or like the mafia or something, you do need some sort of state societal support, and, you know, obviously any sort of, you know, right-wing racist states, they no longer exist anymore. I mean, the Confederacy got destroyed in the American Civil War, and, you know, Third Reich was destroyed during World War II, or if you want to talk about, say, you know, Japanese imperialism or sort of racism, you know, the theocratic Shinto state of Emperor Hirohito got destroyed in World War II, or, you know, Mussolini's Italy as well. South Africa and apartheid, of course, disappeared, in 1990 or so. So there isn't really any state there. Or as you think about the KKK, I mean, they, of course, had a kind of, maybe you could say, like a kind of quasi-state support in a segregation society. I mean, this was the sort of the unreconstructed South that was really sort of, you know, going along with any person who wants to go, you know, go night riding, you know, do some vigilante violence with the KKK, and the authorities will approve of that, turn a blind eye to it, let it go on. That no longer exists as well. So, yeah, there is no state support here. Well, I guess that brings up an interesting question. You know, the people bringing this lawsuit is indeed, as we've indicated, CARE, this Council on American Islamic Relations, which has its background since its founding in 1994, out of these Hamas front groups in the United States. Did that issue ever come up in the court case that, talking about who's bringing the suit and, the whole nature of Islamic terrorism, did that ever come up in the court dealings?
Well, it didn't get into the specifics that you're referring to, the like linkages between CARE and Hamas and its origins and so forth, or financial dealings. The issue for the courts that the courts were looking at is, does CARE even have standing to sue? And the courts said ultimately no. They don't even have. In other words, for your listeners, they don't even have a justification to be suing. They haven't demonstrated an injury that either me or the college district has caused them. So in other words, let's say, for example, somebody picks up a phone and calls CARE's national headquarters and says, let's say they call the landlord for CARE's national headquarters and says, you know, you're renting out space to a terror group. You should kick them out of the building. Okay, that is one type of, the most obvious sort of way maybe that you could interfere with an organization's mission and what would give them standing to sue. But in this case, as it refers to me, it's simply CARE heard something that it didn't like. That it was offended by, and that doesn't give any sort of standing to sue. There's no organizational standing that can be granted just on that basis. They don't have an injury. They don't have, it's just words that they didn't like.
Yeah, but that was the issue that came up. Yeah, I saw that in the district court order. There's this issue that CARE was claiming that because of what you said or were arguing, that CARE had to divert resources from its mission of, you know, combating Islamophobia, as they say, this, you know, this made-up word, and that was a harm. And you know, and the court said, look, you know, this is what the whole mission of CARE is, that they want to be this advocacy organization. So all they're doing is engaging in advocacy while in this whole claim of opposing what you've said. So there's no harm there. They haven't been forced to divert any resources. Well, that would mean then that if they don't have standing, so the only person then who could still sue was the student himself. Muhammad Sabra individual who brought the case, was CARE then financing his lawsuit, I guess, or was it all joined together in one
lawsuit? Yeah, I'm not sure about how the specifics work with that, but they were all joined together, correct. So, I mean, that's an interesting aspect of it there. The way that this all started, if you go back to the origins of it, is right. The student, Sabra, didn't like certain questions on the quiz, the quiz for the module on Islamic terrorism. And he had emailed me basically saying, I'm offended. I emailed back. I gave a long explanation and saying, look, we're trying to find the justifications for why tens of thousands of young men from all over the Islamic world sign up for jihad. What's their motivation? It's not, the course isn't about being for or against any religion. And he, the student Sabra, decided, well, I'm going to take this to social media. And I literally wake up the next morning to phone calls from the college saying, you know, you're on social media, the school was getting bomb threats and all of this stuff, you know, what's going on? And it clicked right away. I knew, you know, what must have happened, that, you know, this student decided to complain through social media. It's odd that the class, there's never been a complaint in the class, but, you know, from a student, 25 years now. And this student, Sabra, still hasn't filed a complaint. He never actually complained. He just went to social media, and then apparently CARE got in touch with them, and then they sued. You know, so that's sort of the origins of it. It just starts off, I guess it's like a case of cancel culture, really. I'm offended, so you have to stop saying these things that offend me.
Yeah, well, so, oh, I see. So the Sabra, the student, he never lodged a complaint with the school, Scottsdale Community College's complaint process. He just went straight to the lawsuit. So, you know, I see. So that's been – and now you've had – for 25 years you've been teaching this course, and you've, you know, I guess, you know, had hundreds or thousands of students. Have you had Muslim students in the course before?
It's hard. I mean, you can't really necessarily tell or anything like that. I'm assuming I have over the course of it makes me sound old to say this, but a quarter century of teaching it, I'm assuming somewhere along the lines I've had. Nobody is complaining, you know. And this raises an interesting point in terms of the lawsuit. What the effect of this, if we just say, let's imagine if CARE won, the effect would be a student could simply veto class. They could simply say, this offends me, my religion, and you'd have to stop teaching it. Because CARE doesn't even address the question of, are the things that I'm saying in the class correct? Their whole case is, well, you're trying to disapprove of Islam. Well, what if I'm saying is true? There's no discussion of that. So that means students would have veto power. They could say, a Muslim student could say, you're offending my religion. And so it couldn't be taught, which is an odd way to try to run an education system or a college or university, where a student can say, you've offended my religion, you have to stop teaching it.
Yeah, indeed, in the CARE complaint, the initial complaint, again, that's linked at this investigative project on terrorism story online about your case, you know, they mentioned that Damask, with his misguided personal biases against Islam and his advocacy for the staunch disapproval of Islam, is injected within 42 slides of class material. So here we have, you know, apparently each and every slide of your PowerPoint is being investigated here. So I guess according to their suit, you know, you know, whatever reading list you have, whatever slide you have, you know, whatever outline you give is now subject to review and scrutiny and can be a cause for a case.
Right. They want to literally make a federal case out of content on PowerPoint slides that they disagree with, that offends them. No mention, by the way, is it true? Which, incidentally, the student and I, we never even got to that question of, okay, what exactly is it that you're offended by? What quiz question, what slide number? Okay, it never even got to that. It's just simply, you offended my religion. And CARE then steps in and says, well, we want to be the nationwide editor of PowerPoint slides when it comes to Islamic terrorism. We want to, like, we want the courts to hand over, you know, power for us to edit PowerPoint slides, you know, which is, this is all ridiculous. The courts have never said that this is okay. They've, you know, historically, I mean, not just my instance, but they've thrown out cases, you know, that in effect demand the same sort of thing. And because you think about the effect. The effect is you don't have universities. You don't have colleges. No, who would want to be a teacher or college professor? Who'd want to do that if some outside group could step in and say, wait, you know, page 24 of your class handouts, you said this. Like, no one would even want to be a teacher or professor.
Well, in the court case, they focused on these three questions from your exam. The student Sabra, Muhammad Sabra, you know, he's saying that his specific violation of his freedom of religion came when that you had these three questions on the exam, that multiple choice exam that he was graded on. And so if he were to give the correct answer, he would lose points on violation of his beliefs. I mean, you had these three questions. Of one was, you know, where is terrorism justified in Islamic doctrine? And you said, you know, in the Medina verses from the Quran, you know, those later verses in the Quran where Muhammad developed an Islamic state in the Arabian Peninsula village or town of Medina. You know, and the you know, this other question was, you know, what example do Islamic jihadists look to when they practice terrorism? And, you know, that was, you know, the example of Muhammad's life. And this other third question was, you know, where is terrorism justified in Islam? And that, you know, the answer was within the context of jihad, of this religious warfare in Islam. And you know, he was saying that, you know, he was being forced in order to get a good grade in the course, you know, to get all the points to answer these multiple choice questions with these answers in this way. And that was that went against his beliefs. But, you know, you were saying, look, all he has to do is to really simply he's being tested on, you know, what are the facts of the course material? You know, what is the, you know, what if he wants to disagree as an individual and say, I have another interpretation of Islam, well, okay, you know, he can do that and have his belief, but, you know, he can't, you know, the facts are that, you know, these other doctrines exist and that jihadists are acting on them, and that's the course material being presented.
Right. If you think about it, if you kind of step back, you could, you know, play this game with virtually any religion, you know, that we can think of, you're asking students about course material, okay? You're asking students about doctrine as it relates to terrorism, jihad, warfare, international relations. The fact that a student may be offended by it, that doesn't then create a prohibition on me from teaching it. It's like, well, can you talk about the content? What about it offends you? It's like, well, you know, that's one of the reasons I try to lay out with specific Quranic references, specific references to the Hadith, specific quotes from classical jurisprudence in Islam, so students understand this is the context of terrorism. This is what the terrorists themselves rely on to justify their action. Now, that may offend you, but that doesn't mean that I'm trying to establish a disapproval for your religion, and therefore you should be able to shut me up. It's, you know, these things have to be talked about because there's hundreds of thousands of attacks, and something is motivating young men to engage in these attacks, to engage in suicide attacks. They end their lives. What could be motivating them? And if that offends you, well, that's just a part of learning, okay? And that can't create a prohibition on my speech, on my academic freedom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess the parallel case that would come up would be like, you know, we've had disputes in schools about, you know, evolution and creationism. I mean, you know, what if, you know, a biology professor or such, you know, teaches a course where, you know, they talk about, you know, how old is the Earth, you know, and I guess the accepted scientific consensus, it was like radiological dating and so forth. It's like some 13 and a half billion years or something. But, you know, you have people who disagree with that and are so-called, you know, young Earth creationists. And, you know, but, you know, scientists say, look, there's just no scientific evidence for any such younger Earth or, you know, like a literal interpretation of the 6 days of Genesis or something. You know, what if some biology professor were to teach, yeah, this is the scientific facts about how old the Earth is or, of you know, the geological history of the Earth or you know, did mankind exist when the dinosaurs were here or something? And, you know, some person with a, you know, sort of a strict creationist view would say, you know, I'm offended. You're saying my religious beliefs are wrong, and then they could sue.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine what it's like, you know, being at a university and being a believing Catholic student. The rhetoric that they probably have to deal with. I mean, that's just the least, you know, talking about evolution, let's say, that's probably the least offensive thing that they hear. Can you imagine like some left-wing purple-haired weirdo sociology professor talking about the Catholic priest, you know, scandals that, you know, have been revealed over the years, you know, related to molestations and things like that. Can you imagine what these, you know, leftist, multiculturalist freaks that are posing as professors in philosophy departments or sociology departments, what they have to say about Catholicism? And the Catholic student had to sit and listen to that. You know, just can you imagine in, you know, an Arabic studies or history department, you know, a Jewish student sitting through an Arabic professor's lecture on the history of, you know, Israel and the West Bank, and what that professor must be saying in class, you know. So that sort of thing, like Catholic students, Jewish students, and so forth, they've had to deal with this stuff for, you know, decades and decades. And the, you know, what CARE is saying is, now we're going to carve out a First Amendment exception for us, that the Catholic student has to sit through it. The Jewish student has to sit through it. But if, you know, a Muslim student is offended, well, we're going to sue the school and the professor. It's really outrageous, you know, what they're demanding.
Well, yeah, and in this complaint from CARE, you know, they say, like, under the free exercise clause of the First Amendment in the Constitution, a government cannot force a person to condemn a particular religion or penalize a student for not agreeing with only one interpretation of a religion as accurate. You know, that brings up a whole host of questions. I mean, now we've got this lawsuit coming up in New York, you know, under their LGBT equality laws. They want to force a state law there. They want to force this yeshiva university, a Jewish university, to accept some LGBT club there, even though, you know, yeshiva university, of course, adheres to the biblical standard that sex should be reserved for marriage between a man and a woman. So I guess there the government's saying that, you know, yeshiva is, university's understanding of religion is wrong, or they're you know, having that particular religion being condemned. And you mentioned the point, too, you know, talking about Israel. You know, I've heard all the time from anti-Israel activists that, you know, Judaism doesn't really involve Zionism. You know, Zionism is just a political movement. It's really not associated with religion, and so therefore it's not religious. So I guess Jewish students are supposed to be supposed to simply take that in a class, that, you know, their Judaism doesn't really involve an attachment to the homeland of the Jewish people, where the upon which the entire Jewish faith is oriented and from which it comes. They're just supposed to go ahead and accept, oh yeah, that's, you know, that's something that's going to be presented in course material, and, you know, I can, a professor can lecture on that and grade me on that.
Yeah. I imagine today, even somewhere in America at university, college, that there is some, you know, Arabic studies professor who has said the exact phrase, Zionism is terrorism, or, you know, Zionism is Nazism. And we don't have lawsuits. You know, the Jewish students have to sit through that. But CARE says, no, that's, we're not going to sit through it. We want to shape and conform the colleges and universities to fit our doctrine, and it's ridiculous. It's I mean, you kind of have to deal with being offended. Unfortunately, I mean, it's not fun to maybe sit through something like that. But you know, what do they want? They want to get rid of those professors that offend Islam, so to speak, and stop curriculum. And by the way, that's part of the original lawsuit. They want to stop the curriculum. They don't want Islamic terrorism taught, you know, anymore. So, you know, that's where – and we see where this leads to. And we basically wouldn't have a First Amendment anymore. I mean, we barely have one on the college campus anyway. But if they were successful, we certainly wouldn't have one.
Mm-hmm. Well, in this whole lawsuit, did anyone help you in this lawsuit? I mean, did any groups like the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, or, for example, this Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, FIRE, did they get involved, or were you just left totally on your own to fight this battle?
Yeah, early on, in, you know, when the students went to social media and kind of got the cancel culture mob riled up, you know, there was the issue of, you know, the college administration's response. And, yeah, FIRE, Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, got to me real quick and, you know, offered support. And, you know, they were able to support me. These were the weeks before the lawsuit. And once the lawsuit was filed by CARE, in probably 6 weeks, roughly, after the original incident, the college district did, in fact, get behind me. The college district has 100% supported me. Because I think they realize the stakes here. I mean, they perfectly understand what CARE is demanding, and they realize it's, you know, this is a possibly one of the most important cases of academic freedom in our country's history. There's a very good chance CARE takes this to the Supreme Court. At least the attorneys, I've always thought that, by the way, since day one. I'm like, oh, they want a Supreme Court case out of this. But, I mean, the attorneys have kind of said as much, you know, in terms of what, you know, where CARE wants to go. It's immediate. It's the only thing would be is, can they raise the funds in time? It's to go to the Supreme Court. That's, you know, a boatload of money. I think that's where CARE wants to go. They want to get this in front of the Supreme Court.
Oh, is there then much possibility for that? I mean, you've had then this affirmation of the dismissal at the level now of the appellate courts. Is there then any thinking that CARE is really going to try to get certiorari, you know, this cert, and get a case at the Supreme Court, a further appeal?
Yeah, so in the Ninth Circuit, there alone, not counting the rest of the country, there's about 16,000 cases that go through the Ninth Circuit. The first option for CARE after losing in the Ninth Circuit would have been to ask for an on-bank review, which would be, instead of a panel of judges, you would have 15 of the judges sitting in review of the case. Well, the Ninth Circuit has drastically cut back on the number of on-bank reviews that they do. I think the last that I saw is that for 2022, they only did 7 on-bank reviews, 7 out of 16,000 cases. So that was probably an avenue that was closed off to them anyway. So that leaves them with just going to the Supreme Court. And I think that, again, it's probably in part at least a matter of money for them. But I think that's where they want to go, is the Supreme Court. It's not – they're not going to let this lie to the extent that they can and they're able. You know, they'll go to the Supreme Court.
Oh, wow, that's interesting. So still not calling it a defeat. It'd be interesting then if that would actually wind up in the Supreme Court, or the Supreme Court would say, no, we won't take the case, you know, we just don't see anything to review here. That's very interesting. But you also say that the community college district ultimately ended up supporting you. I mean, I remember when you first spoke to me about a year ago or so when this first case came up, you know, the community college itself, had, you know, originally drafted like this really, you know, bizarre sort of really humiliating apology for you to sign. And, you know, it sent out like a note saying, you know, we apologize for this. But you're saying that at least the community court, community college district ultimately ended up back to you saying in this legal case recognizing that this is really an important case.
Yeah, the district, I'll say, that, you know, they did their own investigation. They had an outside firm, law firm, even come in and look. And the district itself has been, you know, totally supportive of me. You know, and that ranges from the chancellor to individual board members. And it's not that they, you know, I mean, these are all, okay, we're talking about academics and administrators. They're probably all liberal, every single one of them, but they realize the threat to higher education that this poses. You could not have my class. Neither could you have any religion classes. You couldn't, I mean, philosophy classes would have to abandon material, sociology classes. Just the humanities in general. I mean, you couldn't have humanities. you know, in terms of higher ed. And this would, by the way, this would apply not just to public colleges. It would apply to K through 12 public schools. It would apply to any public institution, let's say a police department that had a consultant come in and give a lecture on terrorism. Okay. This is rather, would be, if CARE would win, a severe threat to academic freedom in any public institution. And so, yeah, the district has recognized this, and, you know, they've, you know, been very good about, you know, the support. So, yeah, this would, I mean, because, the courts have never ruled on, you know, the sort of tension, if you will, between academic freedom and religious offense, we'll call it. The courts have always said, this doesn't belong in the courts just because you're offended. That's not a federal case. And so I think CARE is hoping – I mean, one of the things that leads me to believe this is CARE's reaction after the Ninth Circuit upheld their case being booted out. They sent out this press release, National CARE did, and it was totally histrionic. You know, they were talked about Islamophobia, and this decision upholds Islamophobia. It's obscene. The professor should not have qualified immunity. It was just frothing at the mouth. And, you know, I don't think they want to let this go. So, yeah, ultimately, you know, we'll see. They have until November 8th, by the way, to file for cert at the Supreme Court. So, yeah, we're still maybe 60 days roughly. Well, 60 days, right at about 60 days. So the clock's ticking on them filing with the Supreme Court, but I think it's possible.
Oh, wow, that's interesting, something to watch. Yeah, so you've had this three-judge panel at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and they don't really do en banc that much of reviews with all 15 justices. So now it's – but you will have to wait and see if it goes to the Supreme Court. Well, that would be a really interesting case. And as you've indicated, it's a really very important issue here, high stakes for really education, academic freedom at all levels. Well, this has been a very interesting show. Thank you for joining us, political science professor Nicholas DeMass from Scottsdale Community College.
Thank you, Andrew. It was a pleasure.
And for our listeners out there, join us next Friday for another episode of Conservative Casual Friday with your host, Andrew Harrity, weekly blog talk radio show where we discuss important issues for conservatives and others. Thank you very much.